Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, this is Duray, and welcome to Posse of the People. In this episode, it's me, Miles, and Kaya talking about the underreported news from the last week with regard to race, justice, and equity. The news that you should have heard about, probably didn't, but now you will. Here we go.
It is still Women's History Month, and the Cricut Store is celebrating with a SheCommerce pop-up shop featuring favorites from women of color-founded companies and authors. The shop has everything from delicious goodies to kids' books to candles, all from small companies we love. It's a great way to support women of color and your online shopping addiction at the same time. Check out what's in stock at Cricut.com/store for this month only. Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of Pod Save the People. We're so excited to be with you again this week, family. I'm Kaya Henderson. You can find me on Twitter at Henderson Kaya.
Hi, my name is Miles E. Johnson. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok for now at Feral Rapture.
And this is Duray at DRAY on Twitter.
DR is not with us this week, but she'll be back and... This week, we are talking about lots of interesting stuff that happened over the last week. Let's start with the presumptive Republican nominee. That's all I can call him. And the comments that he made over the weekend at this Ohio campaign rally. Well, he did two things, right? He was talking about the auto industry. And he's like, if I win, I'm going to put 100% tariffs on all foreign cars, basically, right? And these people are not going to sell these cars here. We're going to sell American cars, which is super interesting. And the people are like, yay. And whoever really thinks that that's going to happen. And in the second breath, he's like, and if I'm not elected, it's going to be a bloodbath. It is it like that's the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath. And of course, his camp came back shortly after and said it's going to be an economic bloodbath because Biden's economic policies are going to create, you know, havoc for the country. And of course, the Dems have seized on this and are saying that he is once again inciting political violence. So, of course, wanted to see what my friends thought about that incendiary comment that Mr. Trump has made.
You know, I'll say, I don't know if you saw, but Mike Pence also came out saying that he would not support or endorse Donald Trump. The quote is, "It should come as no surprise that I will not be endorsing Donald Trump this year." He said in an interview on Fox News. I think the thing that worries me about all these comments is how sort of people don't really take them seriously. Like people are like, wow, that was really wild. That was what a crazy thing Trump said. And then it goes on to the next thing. And you're like, that was really nuts to say there'll be a bloodbath. You know, many people said this, but the normalization of terror. This moment reminds me of what the end of Reconstruction must have felt like. Like what happens when people are doing well, you know, at the end of the Obama era, we had good things happening. And then you find the white supremacists using every single, quote, legal mechanism they can to just strip people of power. So it's like, you know, they install judges at every single level. They gerrymander the maps. They like do every single thing that is, quote, legal. I think about what they're doing to public education, Kaya. I never thought I'd be alive to see taking hordes of money away from public schools and in the name of school choice. And like, not on like little experiments, but like trying to wipe out entire districts. But you are, quote, using the legal mechanisms. And like, this is reminiscent of the strategy at the end of Reconstruction. And I'm worried that people like won't see it until it's too far gone. I was watching a reel this morning on Instagram, and this Black woman on this podcast, that was whatever, it was a Black woman and three Black guys, they were all sort of talking about, like, we don't do politics. And I'm like, y'all, they are going to take every amount of freedom you got. And, you know, maybe part of our work is to reframe what politics is. I don't know. But people are just, like, not seeing it. And it's like, oh, they are coming full steam ahead.
I think that's right, DeRay, specifically around, like, the normalcy part of it, like how regular it is. Because if I'm being honest, my reaction to that comment was like, wow, Trump says something wild for spring, groundbreaking. Like, it just wasn't, it just did not hit me. Like I'm a little bit numb to it. What's also interesting to me that I keep on thinking about it is the motivation behind what Trump is saying, too. That I think the bigger political motivation is, of course, like, white supremacy and oppression, but Trump is saying whatever he has to say in order to stay out of jail. There's a weird motivation behind what he's saying and how he's saying it that, I don't know, it's like he's just willing to say anything in order to galvanize and energize his base. And to me, that's an interesting space to be in, where there's no thought of, like, well, what does this mean 8 years from now? Or what does this mean 16 years from now? Or whatever. It's like, no, what does this mean for me to stay out of jail? And that's an odd place to be with somebody who's trying to be president, like that type of desperation and lack of future sight.
I'm very worried about the normalcy that we don't do politics. I mean, this is how January 6th just popped up out of nowhere for many of us, right? Because we heard him sending these dog whistle messages and we heard him saying all kinds of crazy things. And we think we're at a point where, of course, people wouldn't act on that. Of course, whatever, whatever. And then on January 6th, out of nowhere, for some of us, there's a zillion people storming the Capitol. And I think that the same thing is happening right now. One of Trump's spokespersons was like, anybody believing this Democratic spin on this bloodbath comment is stupid. No, no, you are signaling exactly to the people what you want to happen if Trump is not elected. And if you did it January 6th, you can do it again. DeRay, you posted some data on the number of conceal and carry permits in DC going from like 120 something to like 17,000 or something. And like, we can't be naive about the fact that like people have guns, people have lots and lots of guns. We can't be naive about the fact that so many people in the January 6th uprising were police people, military people, other law enforcement people. And like, I am very worried. I have friends who are Black and are gun enthusiasts, and they're always like, Kaya, we got to take you to the range. Kaya, you got to get your permit. Kaya, you got it. And I'm like, do you think the race war is coming to, you know, Bowie, Maryland? And they're like, you never know, right? And now I'm like, maybe I got to get me a conceal and carry permit because I don't want to get caught out here when the people come for me. Literally.
I was over here like, you may not want to say what part of Maryland.
I don't live in Bowie, Maryland. That's where the people are. But, but I do think that this is much more serious than people are taking it. I think that all of this, from the prosecuted Trump to the, you know, I'm for Black men Trump, to the, like, this dude is building a very broad coalition, or is attempting to build a very broad coalition, so that when it goes down, there are lots of people who are outraged. And I am so worried, y'all. I really am worried. I'm worried. I'm not worried about him. I am worried about the people's response, his ability to galvanize people to do crazy stuff, y'all.
The last thing I'll say about this is that there is a question of who can you trust? Because one of the interesting things I found, especially as we organize on the local level, is like, people just can't imagine that political leaders lied to them. Like, they will do backflips to like, well, no, it probably wasn't a lie, to do anything but call it a lie. Like, that is sort of, especially on the left. I know the left better than I know the other sides. And it is really interesting because you look at the policies like, no, no, the strategy really is lock up Black people. That is the strategy. Whether you want to call it a conspiracy or however you want to talk about it, like, the reality is that stealing a bar of chocolate or whatever should not be a prison sentence. And what is, and not naming it as race. Y'all remember Sam Bankman-Fried? Is that he is being recommended. You know, he scammed a gazillion people out of a ton of money. He's being recommended for a 50-year sentence. It would be one of the longest sentences of a white collar crime in American history. And I only know about this because the tech bros on Twitter had been outraged at the excessive sentence. They are like, how dare you? 50 years is crazy. And I'm like, do you know how long we put people in prison for marijuana? This man defrauded. He wiped out pension funds, stole people's retirement. Like, he made up money. Don't, like, all this wild stuff. And people are like, what a crazy sentence. And you're like, the guy who sold marijuana got 30.
But because Sam Bankman-Fried is a young white guy who comes from an upper middle class or a upper class background and whatnot, we think that he is somehow or another elevated. But y'all's Republican presumptive not or now nominee said very clearly that immigrants are not even people. And so the dehumanization, like this is the Reconstruction playbook. This is the Nazi playbook. Like, it is all on a platter for us. And we're like, oh, no, that's not what's happening. Speaking of locking up Black people, the Republicans continue to try to lock up or at least unseat Fannie Willis in the Trump case in Fulton County. If you were following the news this week, the judge said that nothing improper had actually happened, but the appearance of impropriety was significant enough to make either Fannie resign or the special prosecutor, Nathan Wade, her former paramour, resign. And so Nathan Wade stepped down this weekend so that Fannie's office can continue to prosecute the case. And the judge paused parenthetically to say that Fannie hadn't done herself any favors because she acted quite unprofessionally. And so what do you think about that, friends?
I think Fannie had one job. Goodness. I think that she had one job, and yes, it's not fair. Yes, double standard. But the standards have been doubled for as long as there's been a Double Tree Hotel. Okay, so standards have been doubled. But I don't know. I'm also hoping that Shonda Rhimes picks this up as well, because I really want to get the details about the details about this, because it's very, I don't know, it's very juicy. But the remorse for her, I think I don't have a remorse for a lot of like Black professionals, indoor elites, because I'm like, well, if you played that game and you wanted to go and be the Black woman, because you're not ignorant to the optics, you're a Black professional woman who's going to take down Trump, who's like this new old wave of white supremacy, and you wanted that moment, I'm like, well, you can't go and get busy with your loyal boo cousin friend. Like, you can't, not cousin child. That's not our side.
That's how bad rumors get started.
That's not our side, but you can't do that. So it's kind of like, yeah, but to me, out of all the places it could have went, when I think about what happened to the women at Harvard and just what I've seen happen to professional Black elites and stuff, I kind of feel like it's a smoother conclusion than what it could have been. So that's good. Yeah.
You saying play thug games, win thug prizes, right?
Yeah. I'm surprised they ain't gotten. I'm like, you must have a really clean record, because I'm waiting for them to talk about the Twix you stole when you were 12. I'm waiting for them to talk about how you stole them. Like, you know, it's just wild. So I'm like, yeah, you knew what you were getting yourself into. Hide your boo.
I thought it was interesting that Nathan Wade, who is the special prosecutor who she did have a sexual relationship with, you know, she was told that he had to leave. Like, the only way she could stay prosecuting is if he left the case. And did you know that he booked an appearance on Meet the Press over the weekend?
Oh, but he didn't show up. I was watching.
So then he doesn't show and says a family emergency. And somebody was like, the family emergency is that somebody called you and was like, sir,
right, this will be sit the down. End
of, right.
Go sit down. What are you down. Doing? I read an article this weekend about the Republican couple, frankly, a lawyer and her lawyer husband. She's been a longtime Republican or conservative, whatever, lawyer in Fulton County, and her husband is a Republican opposition researcher, right? His job is to dig up stuff on people and how the two of them sort of crafted this whole case out of not much of anything. Like, she made wild accusations basically based on Nathan Wade's former law partner, the Black man who testified Terrence somebody or another, I can't remember his last name, maybe Campbell or something, but how this Republican lawyer was friends with Nathan Wade's law partner. And this dude was texting her a whole bunch of stuff about the affair, and he knew for sure X, Y, Z, blah, 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 and then got up, had nothing to back it up. He was also Nathan Wade's divorce attorney. And apparently, according to the article that I read, he was not happy with how Nathan treated his wife on the exit. And so was using this to sort of get back at him, was also not happy about, I guess, how their firm, whatever, didn't work out. And so he fed this Republican lady all of this stuff, which she used to build a case. And then, but then there was never any real evidence. And so
what color was this man? Not that it matters.
He's a Black man. He testified, and then one of Fanny's girlfriends testified to say she knew a whole lot, and both of them had nothing, said nothing, but probably got paid a lot by somebody or another. You didn't hear me say that.
Ashley Merchant, who is the person who blew it all up, she is representing Michael Roman, a former Trump official. That is the connection. But the quotes verifying what you just said, Kaya, are so wild. The quote from Ms. Merchant in her testimony is, Nathan was still married and Mr. Bradley was upset because of what happened in the divorce. He was upset because Nathan and his now ex-wife were still married. The Wades were still married and Nathan essentially just left her after meeting Ms. Willis and dropping the kids off at college. Bradley did not like the way Nathan had treated his wife. He didn't like what was happening in the divorce proceedings. I remember specifically him saying, I handle my business, things like that. I don't leave my life without alimony because da-da-da. They'd been married for almost 30 years, and it was literally right after they dropped their youngest off at college that Wade said, move out.
Whoa.
It's a round world.
Whoa, okay. Okay.
Okay. Because you put that out there in the world, baby, and it came back to bite
okay.
you.
Okay.
And Fanny. Mm.
Right. You thought you were living your best Shonda Rhimes scandal little life here. Yeah.
Honey.
And Ashley Merchant came out of nowhere. It said, no thanks. Okay, guys, sorry. Move us on to the next news.
So Kate Middleton.
Kate Gate.
Who the world is obsessed with. Yes, Kate Gate. Help me understand. I find it wholly reasonable that somebody might have had surgery and might need some time to recover.
Kaya, good night.
Okay. I could give a flying hoot about when that lady is coming back or who's seen her or whatever the case may be. Tell me, help me understand. I mean,
I think DeRay probably can help you better with like the original interest in it because I don't possess that. I did possess interest once you start covering it up. Like, so I didn't care where Kate was. I was kind of with you. Whatever, but then when you start releasing stuff and it's fake, and I'm like, now Kate, blink twice. I need to see you. Like, I need to know where you at. So I think the cover up is what got me fascinated with it because I'm like, what are you covering up? You know. And I do think there's something too. What I've seen other people say online around, you know, Queen Elizabeth has, you know. She's still warming the ground, child. And y'all already just things just crumbling. Every single time I look around, something wild is happening. Y'all couldn't even get a good 10 years, 5 years of showing face. It's just things are already crumbling. I don't like that.
So I also didn't care until the cover up. But the last time Kate was seen was December 25th.
Okay.
And then they put out that image that was clearly Photoshopped.
Well, wait. Before the image, there was the image of her in the car. It was like a Range Rover, and she was in the car.
We didn't care about the image. Nobody cared about that. But what made it a big deal...
But I'm just saying she had been seen.
No, that wasn't real. Kaya, no, she had not been seen since December 25th. There is no Kate.
Did they kill her?
But they put out the photo, and the photo being doctored was crazy because the AP and Reuters... Two legitimate sources had to send out a kill notice being like, just kidding, the photo is doctored. And when they did the cover up saying that Kate herself manipulated the photo and uploaded it, now that's the biggest lie. Kate is not...
You know that. Kate don't take no pictures. There's no way.
You know, what made it worse is that they said that originally William took the photo. So he took the photo, she did it on her phone.
And then she doctored it.
No, it didn't happen.
Right.
So... That's the big lie. But I don't know. You know, part of me wants her to be like, the royal family is crazy and I'm refusing to participate in the drama. That would actually be amazing. They have now announced that around Easter, she's going to make an appearance like Jesus.
No, but first they said she was going to resume her duties after Easter. And then I heard something today that's saying it might take a little longer. She might not come out for Easter.
And then Camilla is saying that she is overwhelmed and needs to take a break from public life. Mind you, Big Liz, that's what Twitter calls, Black Twitter calls Elizabeth, Big Liz. Big Liz did that thing for 70 years and did fine.
I disagree with that.
You minimize and you minimize it, Big Liz, because one thing I was shocked with.
No, Big Liz did her duties every day. They might have been imperialistic, capitalistic, crazy duties, but she did them every day. She didn't need a break like Camilla.
You saying she showed up for work?
Kate is hiding. Camilla need a break. Liz came to work every single day. 70 years.
The one thing that I was always shocked with when I would watch like things like The Crown was like, wow, she lived a long time. You know, like, it was just interesting seeing the costume changes and being like, okay, well, oh, she's still here. Oh, she's still in this season too. So there is something about going to work every single day for 70 years.
But she was groomed for this, right? Like, she was born to this. She was trained for this. You know, the young people from other families come into this, and I think they could hang with it. But this is, I don't even know what it is, right? But it's more than what anybody has bargained for. Now, I've seen stuff talking about William's affairs with some horsey-looking lady. I've seen stuff about, oh, yeah, on the interwebs. I've seen stuff that, like, Kate and Meghan and Diana are all sort of in the same boat. Nobody knew what they were really getting them.
Oh, I thought you meant they were all on the same call or something. I'm like, what, in the seance?
No. That none of them knew exactly what they were getting into and all wholly overwhelmed by the royal family. Like, whatever it is, I feel, one, I'm interested in the royals like People Magazine is interested in the royals, right? They're a good story. They're interesting. They're whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not like super serious about it. And like that lady is a mother. She got 3 kids and she is dealing with a crazy set of in-laws is how I really think about it. So I wish the best for her and her children. I don't know about the rest of them clowns.
I am curious to like what could be, and I totally get privacy, so I say this like it's a weird double-sided sword that I'm saying, but I'm like, what could be going on that makes this easier than just saying the truth, you know? Even though hers being like sick or something like that, I get totally get wanting privacy, but at this point it would just kind of be easier to say it.
One of the things that I heard was if she is really sick, like if something is really gravely wrong with her, they have gone out of their way to try to give their kids as normal a life as possible. And when they tell their kids that the mom is sick is probably part of the calculus. And so, you know, just managing what your kids know and don't know, which is hard to do when the whole world cares about your health care or whatever.
That checks out.
I do love that Meghan restarted her Instagram during all of this. I think that's...
But she's also selling some new stuff, right? She's got a whole luxury line.
She got a new podcast.
I do like Meghan. I do like her. But it appears to me, not me trying to be like my most royal PR question, it appears to me that Meghan as a brand is not sticking.
I think that's right, honey.
Yeah. And then also, it appears to me that Meghan doesn't understand. She needs to hire me. Because I don't think that Meghan understands how she can make her brand stick. She really has to go to the Essence brunch. She really needs to go to the NAACP Awards. She really needs to go Rolling Loud. Honey. Because the people who's doing the American Riviera stuff, there's whiter people yet. to do that, and they don't need you. And I think the people who really feel empowered and shaken by her, she's not connecting with. Like, the last thing was, like, Oprah, who's kind of like a bridge between, you know, Oprah's forever hour, like, you did it, sister.
Black Saint Oprah, yes.
You know what I mean? But I'm like, you really need to, like, go and kind of play up this, like, I'm in it for you. More videos than Tyler Perry's mansion that he let you stay in.
I remember when they got married and it was one of the blackest things you ever did see in the UK.
Which is not saying a lot.
We were up at, it's not saying a lot, but it was black. It was black. And, you know, I was calling her Cousin Megan and we were all so excited and Flip LeBlanc, Serena and Idris and Oprah and all of the things, right? And I feel like I want to like Cousin Meg. I have drifted off from Cousin Meg because she ain't really feeling us. But like, I'm like, Meg, we the only place you really been home, sis. We gonna take you no matter what happens. So you better come on and cultivate this little relationship on this side of the world because them people already done told you how they feel about you. And we'll always love you. We'll always keep you. But keep treating us like trash and you gonna find out the hard way. Tyler Perry opened his arms for you. But listen, sis, you better come on to where you are loved and...
Not even a picture with Scary Spice. Nothing. Like, you need to show Negro Alliance. that's where your power's going to come in at.
I'm just think you are right, Miles. I think you're right. Mm.
Don't go anywhere. More Pod Save the People's coming. Yeah, so my news is you all probably heard that the House just passed a law that would essentially ban TikTok. It would do more than that. It would allow for the federal government to intervene in a host of aspects with social media companies, but it has been called the TikTok ban. You might have seen the CEO of TikTok come. The spin on this has been that they are concerned that there's a national security threat. And that this law will force a Chinese-owned company to hand over the data to an American owner so that it will no longer be a threat, a national security threat. The company has insisted that they never share U.S. data with the Chinese government, and this is the fight. If it is passed and signed into law, it has not yet been voted on by the Senate. It would give ByteDance, the owner of TikTok, 180 days to sell the platform, and for the U.S. government to be okay with the sale, and it would bar ByteDance from controlling TikTok's algorithm. So that is what happened. My news is that people have been taking this at face value, and I sort of did too. And then I looked up and was like, oh, former Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, who was Treasury Secretary under Trump.
Mnuchin, I think, is the way you say
his Mnuchin, name. Mnuchin, all the things. The cousins okay. Call him Mnuchin.
Mnuchin your ass.
Let's call him Mnuchin because that's what the Republicans do. They call you whatever thing they want.
Right. Yeah. He's putting together an investor group to buy it. Now, this is a reminder that they don't want to stop TikTok. They don't want to ban TikTok. They want to own TikTok. And in the same way that they did this with Twitter, Elon bought Twitter, took down all the restrictions, all the hate speech, flagging. He brought back all the people who have been banned for inciting violence and racism and all this other stuff. And they want to do that to TikTok. And they know, you know, there have been a lot of news reports about what the conversation about Palestine has been on TikTok and really did in some way shift a generation to be critical of what happened and what is happening in Gaza in a way that is scaring the Republicans, and they want to do this before the election in November. And when I saw that he was putting together this investor group, I was like, you know, it really is. It always comes down to money and power for the Republicans. Like, that is, say what you want to say about whatever the play is, money and power is the thing. And yeah, I was really fascinated by this. So I thought I'd bring it back up because it's wild.
I'm used to having unpopular opinions, but I feel like this opinion is like maybe one of the more unpopular ones because I know most people care. But like, I don't know, maybe I just braced for this. Walk with me if you remember this, because I know there's so many things that have been happening. Remember like the unidentified flying object that was like the balloon that was observing people?
Oh, yes. The Chinese.
Mm-hmm. And how that was tracked to being Chinese stuff. Like, I knew then that something, I was like, oh, this TikTok thing, TikTok for real. Like, there's a time on this. Because this is a piece of technology that's taken, or an app that's taken over culture that's not controlled by America. And then actively, this place is also doing this kind of stuff. It just always seems like it's going to, it had an expiration date on it. And I understand, you know, the autopsy that people are doing where like, look, they want to buy it and stuff like that. But I'm like, isn't that the game plan? Like, that's just such quintessential American gangster Republican yuck move. But like, it's not like to me, like surprising. It's like, yeah, they're going to take it and they're going to steal it. And this is what's going to happen. But I think I just saw this so long ago. And it, and if I'm being really honest, I'm surprised that it lasted as long as it did. Because if I'm remembering correctly, this is not the first time that this has been threatened. I think this is like now it's moving and it's being passed and stuff. But I remember hearing about this a couple of times and me reading about it and being like, yeah, that checks out. Like, yeah, it feels surreal that it even lasted in this country for this long. When we think about Russia, when we think about all the documents that we've seen about there being cultural war started by foreign places on purpose in order to shape votes and like all this other stuff that we're supposedly concerned about. I'm quite frankly surprised that this wasn't used as an excuse to own and destroy TikTok like a lot earlier. I'm surprised it took this long. I know that's not popular though.
It doesn't have to be popular and it might be prescient. Like, so on the one hand, like you, Miles, from the balloon thing to the, I don't know if you remember the televisions, there were these Chinese televisions that were being sold in the United States. I can't remember the brand. And the FCC found out that they were communicating stuff back to China. Like there was some built-in mechanism where they were transmitting back to China. And what's the shopping thing? Is it Temu?
Yes.
Which like ran 900 zillion ads during the Super Bowl, which is the most like expensive ad time, and the accusation that they are taking all of your information. Like there is something to what is happening with China and information flow and all of that jazz. And it is, DeRay, to your point, the Republicans' obsession with money and power that they've basically found a back door in. Like the Republicans have been trying to control the tech companies and haven't really figured out how. And I think this national security angle is very, very interesting. And like there's something to Chinese ability to possess and whatever our private information. But I'm just like, we're not even pretend, like we are sort of pretending it's that. I think what we have done is use this national security moment or issue to open a door for Republicans to just consolidate their money and their power by buying this business. Because if we were really concerned about national security, why wouldn't the government take over TikTok or create a consortium or something like that, right? But Mr. Mnuchin is like, nope, I got a group of people. We'll buy TikTok. We'll control the information. And you can best be sure, my guess is whoever's on that list has stuff to do with Fox 5 and the whole Republican media conglomerate. And so, I don't know, if it stinks, it stinks. And it stinks to me. In other political news, my news this week is from the state of Florida. And for me, it is slightly optimistic news. Just an indication that the arc of the universe bends towards justice, even if it happens very slowly. This is an update on the war on woke. And so in the last legislative session in the state of Florida, a number of culture war proposals from conservative lawmakers bit the dust. There was a bill banning rainbow flags from public buildings in Florida to protect children from subliminal indoctrination, and that failed. There was a bill banning the removal of Confederate monuments, and that failed. There was a bill requiring transgender people to use their sex assigned at birth on their driver's license. That failed. And there was a bill forbidding local and state government officials from using transgender people's pronouns. That failed. These bills and some others failed, even with the public support from Mr. DeSantis, which is different from the days when the Republican supermajority in the Florida legislature passed everything the governor asked for. In fact, pushback is growing tremendously in the state of Florida to the war on woke. There have been lots of organized protests from parents and community members against school book bans. The abortion rights advocates have gathered enough signatures to put the issue on the ballot in Florida in November so that people can vote on abortion. There was a fetal personhood bill that stalled in the legislature before it even got to a full vote. And in perhaps one of the most striking defeats of the Stop Woke Act, a 3-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals unanimously ruled that the Stop Woke Act exceeds the bounds of the Constitution's First Amendment right to freedom of speech and expression. And so I brought this because I think it is an indication of a couple things. One, whatever DeSantis was doing, steamrolling a whole bunch of crazy culture war stuff through the Florida legislature, I think that we're not going to see that continue to happen. And it's Republicans who are actually stopping. I mean, again, Republicans have a supermajority in Florida, so whatever Dems do doesn't really matter. But it's Republicans who are saying too much, too far. We're not willing to support this. The head of the Florida legislature, the Republican Senate president, Kathleen Passidomo, has stopped several of these bills progressing, and she's just being reasonable. And so I am excited for the return to reason. I think sometimes, like, I am worried that things that we have taken for granted as part of social compact, mainly civil rights values and tenets, are being completely and totally eroded. And I think that reasonable people don't want to live in the unwoke world. I think I understand the tension between, you know, white preservation of power and privilege and living in a multicultural, pluralistic society that is true to the American ideals of everybody having a chance. But I think that reasonable people do reasonable things. I hope that reasonable people get encouraged to do reasonable things when they see things like this happening. And so I brought this to the podcast because I feel like, you know, as Dems, we get a steady onslaught of, you know, the Republicans just steamrolling this stuff through. And I think we've had examples like Kansas and their abortion sort of overturning and things like people in Florida saying, nah, we've gone too far. And I wanted to bring it here so that we can encourage other people to find their reasonable center and to stop some of the craziness.
So, Kai, this is just like so much of what Trump is doing reminds me of the end of Reconstruction. This actually reminds me of the same framing that white supremacists had around restricting, denying, limiting Black people's ability to read. That it was really clear during that era that they were like, if Black people can read and start reading things, it's going to be revolution. That was clear. They wrote that. They said it. It was, I just read this incredible book called School Clothes by Professor Gibbons at Harvard. And I didn't know, it still blows my mind. I didn't know that they would not only beat and whip Black people who were trying to read, but they would pour acid in their eyes to make sure that they could not see in the future. Now, I bring that up because I was reading, when you put this in for this week, I was reading about what the Federal Appeals Court said when they blocked the Stop Woke Act. And it centered around a workplace training around institutional racism and whether they could require that for their employees. Now, this is what the governor's office said when the court said that this was, quote, a First Amendment sin, like making that illegal. The court was like, this is such a wild thing. This is what DeSantis's team said. Quote, we disagree with the court's opinion that employers can require employees to be taught as a condition of employment that one race is morally superior to another race. The First Amendment protects no such thing. And the state of Florida should have every right to protect Floridians from racially hostile workplaces. That is quite a framing. And then DeSantis said in 2022, when he was pushing this, he said, quote, no one should be instructed to feel as if they are not equal or shamed because of their race. In Florida, we will not let the far left woke agenda take over our schools and workplaces. And I'm fascinated by those statements because at once they are just blatant lies, but two, they are a reminder that the more they are afraid that people know the truth about what has happened in this country, because the more people know, the more, like, I think about every day in the work that I do, that if people actually saw the underbelly of this, they would just revolt. It wouldn't be, forget a meeting, forget a vote thing, forget a, it would be topsy-turvy. And they are working really hard as a narrative piece to say that teaching about systemic racism is actually doing what they're doing about more like the superiority of a race, or is making a racially hostile workplace. Like, they are trying to flip the intent, knowing that people won't really dig a little deeper, but just to give sort of some talking points. But I am, and Miles, I'm actually fascinated by what you make of these statements that they have made. But I read it and I was like, oh, that is an interesting way to try and justify this.
Yeah. The first thing that I think of is how there's just like a steady effort in like anti-intellectualism. Because I think about like what literature and what certain types of discussions do for my mind, even outside of the topic. So, of course, when I think about, or when I've read about race, or when I read about gender, it has expanded or developed how I feel about gender and race and sexualities and class and all these different things. But it also empowers me to navigate interpersonal, professional, if I'm on the street and something happens, those type of situations too. And I think about the effort to keep a population of people, as many people as possible, not thinking critically, because when you think critically, you think complicatedly. And then when you are able to think complicatedly, when complicated things happen, you're able to problem solve and navigate those things. And there seems like to be an effort to make sure people are not able to problem solve and navigate those things, even outside of what the hot button topics that we talk about. And it actually makes it easier to make it just about race or just about gender or just about these things, not minimizing those things. But it's easier to make it about this other thing, because when it comes home to you, you don't recognize it. And the perversion of certain languages of making it like okay and making it like this is a First Amendment thing, and like to me that just feels like power for the course. Like the same thing happens in like to me like pop culture media, where things get absorbed and all of a sudden being a feminist is good and being a feminist is great, but then what being a feminist is changes. So you can still call yourself the language of it, but now what it means is different and it's more shallow. I feel the same thing with like this like a lot of the language that they're using now can't weaponize this against us because we're here for it too. Am I making sense? Like, it's just gutting the meaning and shifting it so it could be used, which is like the regular cycle of dominant culture. Because dominant culture can't really be against anything. It just has to be able to absorb and pervert anything to be for it in order for it to progress. So I'm kind of like going, that sparked a lot of different neurons in my brain, child. But like the main thing that I'm thinking about is how this is a total anti-intellectual movement. And when people are pushed, people are not able to navigate the problems in their lives, and how wanted that is for people who are profiting and getting political and financial power from people being ignorant and being kind of perpetual victims.
Don't go anywhere. More Pod Save the People's coming.
So I was looking up, I was asked to do something, and I guess I want to first say that I do not know what this person suffered from mental health-wise, and if anything. But I do want to say this is how I arrived here for this being my news. I was asked to do something for Bipolar Awareness Day, and that was on March 30th. And then it felt very interesting to me that I was watching the Regina King, because Regina King just came out with her Shirley Chisholm movie, and she hasn't really been interviewed a lot. And of course, one of the things that she's going to be interviewed about is going to be about her son who died by suicide a couple of years ago. So then I thought to myself, oh, I didn't know that Bipolar Awareness Day was a thing. And I also think about how May and days in May are kind of like, that's when everybody talks about mental health, a lot like LGBT. And I wanted to do better at talking about things outside of the allotted time that we have to talk about things because it's on our month cycle. So I was like, no, it's March and let's talk about it. And let's still highlight the issue of mental health and the experience of mental health. And then also, what really made this news to me is how Regina King decided to address her son, which I thought, as somebody who's dealt with suicide ideation, who's dealt with mental health problems my whole entire life, I thought that it was really brilliant how she decided to handle this publicly and what she said. So let me read it to you. This was in the Hollywood Reporter, and she was talking to Good Morning America's Robin Roberts. That name, child, that always gets me. Speaking with Good Morning America's Robin Roberts in an interview that aired on Thursday, King opened up about both Alexander Jr.'s choice to die and the journey she's experienced as she grieves her only child. When it comes to depression, people expect it to look a certain way and they expect it to look heavy, King said of Alexander Jr.'s struggles in her first extensive comment since he died. To have experienced this and not be able to have the time to just sit with Ian's choice, which I respect and understand that he didn't want to be here anymore, that's a hard thing for other people to receive because they did not live our experience, did not live Ian's journey. So one of the things that always frustrates me when I've talked to both therapists and friends about like suicide ideation, depression, anxiety and other disorders that I won't necessarily disclose like on a podcast, but when people talk about it, it's almost like makes the person who's experienced mental health an infant and makes them into somebody who and this like language around like, oh, it's a disease also, that kind of takes away that person's kind of intellectual autonomy and takes away that person's kind of like intellectual autonomy and both political, social, political awareness when they're engaging with that disease. And I thought it was really powerful for a Black mother to, as difficult as it was, have to say, no, this was a lucid person who was suffering and who looked at what their life has been and looked at what the world has been and did the math on it and said, I'm not here to do that anymore, and I'm not willing to do that anymore, or I'm not interested in doing that anymore, and I made a choice. And I think something around that really makes the making of a better world, making for mental health, us being aware about mental health, makes it more of our responsibility. I think that if mental health or suicide is always a monster that happens, it's also always something that takes somebody over, or there's this, I always say this analogy, it might be a little rough, but hopefully y'all understand that sometimes people see suicide as like the serial killer that takes over somebody's body and kills them. They don't see it as a conscious choice to not want to show up anymore. I think about the man who passed away, who's on the Ellen DeGeneres show, who was always smiling. And everybody was like, Twitch, yeah. And I think about him a lot and how people were like, oh, I can't believe it. He was so happy and you never know what people are going through. And I'm like, yes. And also, somebody also can be saying, oh, I'm here to smile. And I'm tired of that, you know? And I just think that how she worded it, where she made your mind and your spirit go by saying that it was his choice, actually put more responsibility to our community, to each other, about making a better world, about showing up for other people and not making it something that's uncontrollable, that possesses somebody, and then, you know, that's it. Something was really, to me, brilliant about how she worded it, and it felt really cathartic for me to read, because I think when I am in these conversations that are really difficult to have with people, specifically like neurotypical people, it's hard for people to grasp, you know, and then you come up with language like there's this filled with shame, or this person was selfish, or this person was so out of their mind and they did something that they might regret. And I think there's something about her saying like, no, look at this world that has been built. I believe this person was 25 when they died by suicide. So look at the life that they've lived times the world that has been built and like the options they had. And this is the option that they chose, even though it wasn't comfortable for them. And I do think that that is the next step. And I think because hopefully it's ain't nobody's friend, but I'm not saying anything rude. But I think that sometimes when I think about the Charlemagne commercialization of mental health talk and go to therapy and do this, and like it's very commercial, it's very shallow, I think that I was happy to hear this deeper, both intellectual and spiritual analysis of something like suicide than this is what happens when somebody's not on meds, or this is what happens when somebody's taken over by something, but also this is what happens when somebody's just alive and awake in America. And somebody has lived enough life and seen where things are going and has decided to like turn the video game off. Like, that's also something that we have to sit with. And it may not be easy to sit with. It may not be comfortable for us to sit with, but it actually helps us come up with some real answers and have some real conversations to help more people feel like that choice that is available to them is not the best choice anymore, you know? But I do think it's having those rougher conversations and not just totally turning the person who made that choice into this infant who can't control their mind and their actions and who didn't know what they're doing, or this selfish monster who did something and left everybody behind. I think there's the in-between space that Regina King masterfully hit that I'm just impressed that, A, I'm impressed when anybody hits that, but also somebody who's a Black woman and a Black mom, and we have all these kind of like pathological stereotypes around Black people and mental health, and we don't do that and we don't talk about that and that's not what Black people do, and not only saying this is something that a Black person did because that person was my son, but I'm gonna actually address this in a way more progressive way than I've heard it happen in the public sphere. So yeah, I wanted to bring that to the podcast because I want to be just better about talking about mental health in a way that is more robust and deeper and challenging, because I do think that's the start of having more robust and deeper answers and solutions so people can make choices that, you know, make themselves comfortable, but also make other people comfortable, you know, as well.
I appreciate you bringing us to the podcast, Miles. And the point about, like, this is not madness that took over somebody, like the point of intellectual presence, right, and an informed decision, I think is really, really an interesting point. Some additional things that stuck out to me about this article. One was Regina King totally controlling when and how much she wants to deal with this incredibly personal thing. I think, you know, one of the tremendous downsides of celebrity is we expect that we own celebrities and so we should know everything and whatnot. And there's sort of a privacy thread running through, I think, our whole conversation this morning, from Princess Kate to we were having an offline conversation about Oprah. And I do think we're in a different space where we can reclaim how much we share with people, even in the age of social media. Regina King is doing interviews now for the Shirley biopic, but she said, I'm ready to talk about my son. I want to do it one time. I want to do it with this one particular interviewer, and that's it, right? Because I don't want him to be the poster child for whatever. And so I appreciate the way that she has drawn her boundaries and is utilizing her power to do what is best for her. The other thing that came through to me here, you know, Regina King is around my age, and I feel like we grew up together in the same time frame. She says that the thing that defines her most is being Ian's mom. And I am sure that that is surprising to some people, because people think, well, wait a minute, you're Regina King. You've done all of these things. You're rich, you're famous, you're blah, blah, blah. And the most important thing to her was being a mom to this son. And so it was humanizing for me in a way that we don't usually get with celebrity news. And it also reminded me that we get to manage our own public narrative if we are willing to draw some boundaries. And so I thought it was a really powerful reminder that we don't owe people, like, you know, one of my friends says all the time, I'd rather be rich, but I never want to be famous. I think about my time at DC Public Schools, and the hardest part, I mean, the job of running the school system is super hard, but the hardest part was operating in the public eye, because people make assumptions about how much they own you and what you are supposed to do and all of that kind of thing. And so this was a really important reminder that as Black women, as Black mothers, as people, we get to define how much other people consume of us, even when we're in a consumption industry.
I appreciate you bringing this to, you know, somebody I'm close to the other day texted me and was like, he was watching something and it touched on suicide. And he was like, wow, I didn't realize that the number of men who commit suicide or die by suicide is so high. And I was like, well, I just always assumed that we thought it was high. You know, it's something like 80% of Black people who commit suicide are men. So I always thought that was like a 2014 number, which is one of the latest statistics. But I always thought it was really high. And when you factor in gun control, it's even wilder because most men use guns. So I took for granted that I feel like I had heard stories about suicide a lot, and I personally have been impacted by people who I know people who die by suicide. But what I think I'm struggling with is the public conversation about loneliness. That makes sense to me. But how the research suggests that if we talk about suicide more, that people will copycat. And that, like, when celebrities die by suicide and then there's reports on it, that there is a measurable increase in suicides. And the hard part for me is that I feel like this becomes a topic that people don't really, like, it just becomes an undiscussed thing, but a really big thing. Like, a thing that I think we need to talk about a little bit more. And I don't know what to do with that. Like, I get the reasons why people don't publicly talk about it. And, you know, Regina's son, like, she's so famous that it became a story of its own. But this is a much bigger deal. And I don't know how we talk about the loneliness crisis or mental health or any other thing happening and not talk about suicide too in public, even though the research, I don't know. I'm like stuck because I've looked at the studies and I'm like, I get it. But I echo everything that you all said about, like, she did it on her terms and said, I'm not doing this I'm not talking about this every 2 seconds just because y'all want to talk about it. And she is one of our, like, old school Black celebrities in a way that I don't know if we will get celebrity in that way again. Just like, you know, came up in a time and era, not a TikToker, but like a tried and true celebrity. So I'm excited about seeing Shirley as well. And the interview sort of broke my heart in some ways too, because you can, you know, she's still dealing with the pain of it, but I don't know. I want us to talk more publicly about suicide, and I don't know what to do with that.
One thing I'll say before we close too, around your point, DeRay, is that I've heard those stats too. And I don't know, something about me, I think I do challenge those things. And I think that the invisible part of those stats is, it turns people, like, well, I was kind of using the term infant a lot. Like, it's like, oh, if we talk about it, then these people who don't have control over their brains are just going to copycat these, like, other people. Even, like, the term copycat is something that we use for kids or whatever. It is one of those things where if one person who you see has all this going on and has maybe a better section of life than you, socially, politically, financially, and they can't handle it, then that is the risk that we take. But I think that obviously, not taking that risk is still harming people. And I think that the more we see, again, as uncomfortable as it is, as we see suicide as a type of choice, not something to be condoned or avoided, but something that we have to move through as a society and make a better society where that choice does not seem beautiful or interesting or like the best choice anymore, that's how we have to move through it. Because just avoiding it is not doing it anymore. But the risk is that if you talk about it with somebody or if something happens or somebody does do it, then yeah, the risk is that other people are like, well, if this person can't handle like their life, then who am I? But I don't think that's working anymore. Just avoiding it, I don't think that's working anymore. But to your point, I don't have all the answers to it, but I just wanted to give that little note because I've thought about that too.
Well, that's it. Thanks so much for tuning in to Bodies of Other People this week. Don't forget to follow us at Cricket Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And if you enjoyed this episode of Pods of Other People, consider dropping us a review on your favorite podcast app. And we'll see you next week. Pods of Other People is a production of Cricket Media. It's produced by AJ Moultrie and mixed by Vasilis Futopoulos. Executive produced by me, and special thanks to our weekly contributors, Kai Henderson, DR Ballinger, and Miles E. Johnson.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.